All right, time for another edition of the Life 2.0 podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. Glad to have you joining me from anywhere and everywhere around planet Earth. Time to go up the down staircase in the outdoor. Make sense out of the senseless, and if at all possible, find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. This is the third restart of this particular podcast. Hazards of the business, using your voice as much as I use mine for radio and podcasting and audio production and things. And there are just some days it does not want to cooperate. If you can see the jar of throat lozenges on my desk, it is chock full. And I use them quite often. Anyway, glad to have you joining me. As I said, this is a bit of a well, they're all interesting to me, but this one in particular has to do with the passing of time and passing in general. The news came to me late last week that a very close cousin of mine passed away. And when those things take place, when that news reaches me, because I can only speak for myself, it does a couple of things. One is I start counting the days. It's just something I've been doing for most part of my life, and I'll get to the human math of all this in just a little bit. So first and foremost, I start counting the days. And I don't count the days so much that I have, but I counted the days that he and I had together. His name was Ricky, and he was just 64 years young. We're basically the same age. Spent a lot of time together as kids. I'm going to share a little bit of that with you in just a few minutes as well. But that's the first thing. I start counting those days we had together. I look at them from the perspective of time, from the long view of things. And then the second thing inevitably what happens is I think about, well, what about me? You know, what about my time? What about what I got left or not? And so all of those things play a part of our lives. They are it's the inevitable outcome for everybody listening to this podcast, your host included, and everybody we've known or will ever know. And anyone who's ever been born and ever will be born is that there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And some of us get a lot of time and some of us don't get very much time. So for me, that is the determining factor of what do I do with my time? How do I spend it? How do I invest in it? Those type of things. And a lot of it, of course, is unconscious, right? I mean, you go through life and you do the things you need to do and you work and you pay the bills and all that stuff. But it is interesting how it becomes like part of the fabric of our lives to go through the motions to some degree. And then death comes along and disrupts all that. And it's a jarring wake-up call, at least it is for me. But I'll get to all that in just a few seconds. But what I said about working and earning a living and things like that, I had to go online and do a little digging about how we spend our time during our lifetime. Number one, sleeping. If you get 8 hours a night, which is about the average, it means then that the average person will sleep 229,961 hours in your lifetime, or basically, if you're lucky and it all works out, one third of your life. So a third of your life is spent in the land of nod. So you got to kind of move that off to the side. Eating, necessary part of life you got to do in order to survive, right? A study done in the U.S. said that the average American spends 67 minutes per day eating and drinking beverages. I work and eat at the same time for the most part, so I guess I can kind of get away with some things. Summed up together, the average person spends a staggering 32,098 hours eating and drinking beverages during your lifetime. I think the choice of beverage kind of matters too, don't you think? Now we're getting into the serious stuff here. Driving, cruising down the street on a hot summer day, playing maybe Radar Love with Golden Earring can be a lot of fun, but can also be a drag. Now listen, 3 days a week, I head downtown and take my highly significant other to work. So driving, I don't know, 9 miles on the Eisenhower Expressway in Chicago traffic sucks. Wazoo. But you sit in traffic, it's gridlock, and it's like the worst of human behaviors on display behind a 4-ton vehicle, right? The average American spends 101 minutes per day driving. I can believe that. That means in a lifetime, you're going to spend a whopping 37,935 hours driving a car. Assuming you start at 17, when most people do, and get their driver's license, and you drive till about 78, which is maybe the far end of things, but that's kind of how it works out. In that time, you will drive around 798,000 miles, which is approximately the distance it takes to drive to the moon and back more than three times. Work, big part of our lives, but how much time do we actually spend working? Well, here's how it breaks down. Let's say you work 40 hours a week. Ha, ha, ha. That hasn't happened for a long time. But anyway, let's say you work 40 hours a week from the age of 20 to 65, which is kind of the old average, if you ask me. But anyway, we'll use it for that. And then you get 2 weeks of vacation every year. That is so, like, out of date. But again, for our purposes, it works. In that time, you will have worked a total of 90,360 hours of work. Put in your time, right? Putting on the chains, the golden handcuffs. 90,360 hours spent working in a lifetime. Then we kind of wander into the more, distractionary efforts in our lives. In the past 10 years, the internet has become, you know, everything. It's how I do this show. It's how people connect. While there's a lot about the internet that I find like, wait, what? It is a great tool. You know, I can send an email. I still get, you know what's interesting? I still get regular letters from people at times, handwritten sometimes. But to get a letter in the mail, a real physical letter with a stamp on it's kind of cool. But email, of course, is instantaneous and it works great. So we're working, we're shopping, we're socializing, playing games, educating ourselves, reading news online, all that type of stuff. A study done 12 years ago, I think there might be one more recent, and it should be. I couldn't find it, but there's got to be another one. But back in 2010, the average American spends 32 hours per month online. That's about 28,300 hours in a lifetime. And there are, of course, people who do it a lot less. And I've been known to take a hiatus from the internet, back off on things. You know, so the business I'm in and have been in for a long time has changed dramatically. Media, broadcasting, very, very different than when I started back in 19, never mind what year it was. But it has been a while. And so much of the technology that's literally at my fingertips today didn't even exist back then. It just wasn't there. So on one hand, that's why we have two. On one hand, I find it fascinating. And literally every time I come in here to do a show, realizing that somebody's listening to this in Sydney, Australia. That's just mind-blowing to me. Or when I did the show called The Bridge for a year, every day I came in and we would do this show between Chicago and Beijing, China. And my co-hosts were in Beijing, 7,000 miles away. The technology had us sounding like we were all in the same room. Just fascinating stuff. But anyway, you're going to put in about 28,300 hours in a lifetime. And my guess is that as our internet usage has gone up in the last 12 years for sure, it's maybe another 10,000 hours on top of that. It's going to go up. It's definitely not going to go down. If you grew up watching television as a leisure activity, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Stats, the average American watches TV for about 3 hours a day, accounting for around half of the leisure time. Means an average person will watch over 9 years worth of television, or about 80,000 hours. To put that in perspective, you can watch all the Friends episodes over and over again 838 times. Now, I'm not an aficionado of Friends, but they're Three Stooges? Sure. That's about 1,000 hours of Three Stooges on my end. Cleaning, which most people can't stand, unless you're Mary Poppins, who was a fictional character anyway, you're going to spend about 12,896 hours in cleaning things. You know, I could tell you how much time I've cut the grass. I mean, come on. So I've always thought that time was the most precious commodity we have. You know, I'm going to start rolling in here into this human math concept that I came up with about 10 years ago. I did a TED talk on this. And listen, for a guy whose best grades in school were lunch and gym, this is a big deal for me. In the fact that I think that how we were taught math, for example, in arithmetic back in the day, was in a linear fashion. And I use this as a point of entry, meaning that learning the multiplication tables is a universal thing, right? And I've done this in Toronto, and I've done it in Trinidad and every place in between when I've done these human math talks. And if I said to you, and I will, 12 times 12 is what? It's 144. So no matter where I go in the world, 12 times 12 is always 144. It works in a straight linear line. And we've learned that way in a linear fashion. The problem is that life doesn't always add up. It's never, rarely, if ever, in a linear fashion. It's kind of like all over the place, like a roller coaster. So we have this mindset that grew up that everything goes in a straight line And it always adds up. 12 times 12 is 144. And you learn across the board, and A equals B equals C equals D, and you go straight through. And as soon as you get out of school, you realize, if not before you get out of school, life is not like that. So the human math that I came up with was to take the average life expectancy in America. I actually did the talk in Ontario, so I had to use the Canadian life expectancy, which actually was about 4 years older than most of us here in the States. But for our purposes here, we'll use the 78, which is about the average. It's gone up over the years, of course, dramatically. 100 years ago, the average life expectancy was 62. So now we're at 78. We're living longer, just not sure we're living better, but maybe that's up to each and every one of us. So at the 78 average life expectancy, that gives you 28,470 days to be alive. When you say 78 years, it sounds like, whoa, that's a long time. But when you get down to the days, you break that human math down and get out of the linear equation, 28,470 days, if it all works out. My cousin Rick was alive a week ago today. He passed 3 days ago at the age of 64. Ricky's human math number was 23,360 days. That's what he got to do all the things that he needed to do and wanted to do. And the fact that he's gone so quickly, of course, if you're within that time range like I am, we're just months apart, it's a serious wake-up call. And, you know, I think about his family moving on without him, how difficult that is. You know, we all have been in this position to a greater or lesser degree. I think about his wife, Julie, and his kids, Tyler and Hannah. And, you know, all of a sudden there's this huge void there that wasn't there a week ago. And he left a huge void. I'll talk to you about him in just a couple seconds. But Ricky got 23,360 days to be alive. If you take that difference between the 28,470 that is our expectancy and the 23,360 that Ricky got, which is basically the same amount of days I have, if I'm lucky and if it all works out and I hit that average life expectancy, I have 5,110 days left. That's why I don't major in minor things. I don't put up with a lot of bullshit like I used to because I don't have time. It is a major reference point for me. How I spend time now is so different than I did even 10 years ago because the clock is ticking. When you realize, A, that we're all on borrowed time the minute we show up here, and B, I have more yesterdays than tomorrows, unless I live to be 120. And if that happens, I'll let you know. And it gets me thinking, and as I did this in the TED Talk as well, about people who, you know, had a certain amount of time and accomplished some pretty incredible things in that time. Most mornings, I start with music before I work. It gets my brain going in a creative direction. I listen to all types of music. I do a music show in Washington, D.C. on Sunday mornings called The Tao of Music that is based on the work of my friend, the late, great Dr. John Ortiz, who created this whole idea of energy and music and how it improves our lives. So I named the show after John's work, and everything I do in that show is to up the energy level, if at all possible, push back on the erosion of life as much as possible. And so most mornings I start with music, even if I'm working on book stuff or things like that. And probably every third or fourth day, my old buddy John Denver shows up in rotation, as he did this morning, and I think about him, and I think about it's been 25 years since he's been gone, and John got 19,345 days to put his music into the world. One of the other examples I used in my TED talk was Anne Frank, the young girl who was murdered in the Holocaust. I was going to call it what it is. She only got 5,455 days. And then way at the other end of the spectrum, I didn't use this because she was still alive when I did the talk a couple years ago, but Betty White. Betty White lived to be 99 years old. She got 36,135 days. So it's all over the map. There's no way to know. That's the whole gimme about life, right? We know exactly when we're getting here. Everybody listening to this show, myself included, has a piece of paper that says, this is the time you arrived. This is the date you arrived. This is how much you weighed. Here's who your parents were or not. But you have a validation here. Here's this piece of paper, your birth certificate. The death certificate doesn't happen till after you're gone. And that tells when you left, right? But nobody knows when you're leaving. I can't even imagine that John knew it was his last flight or even Betty White, who lived to be 99, that she knew that she would live that long. Or my friend Ricky, who was out, you know, cleaning his car in the garage. He was here 1 second, then gone the next. So this program is called Life 2.0. The idea is to up the experience, you know, to stay out of all the shit and find things to make life worth living. I just think it's like the utmost importance. I have another friend of mine. He's coming up on his 2-year anniversary of his passing. A guy I played football with, a guy I grew up with. I went to high school with him. Just great pals. And he died 2 years ago on Mother's Day. And when I look at his Facebook page, it's frozen in time on that day. And the things that he was talking about, the things that concerned him, and the things that he was worried about, or things that he thought were important to talk about. It's all frozen in time. And so everybody leaves a legacy to a greater or lesser degree. Some are very public, like Anne Frank, who writes a book. Well, actually, the book was written. I mean, it was written during her very short lifetime, not published till after her death. There's no way she would have known at the age of 15 that this book would change millions of people's lives. There's no way. Well, I think John probably had an idea of the impact he made musically in the world, but that 25 years later, this was all still be going on for him. And Betty White, of course, it goes without saying, the body of work that she had, just incredible. And so each of us, I think, in our own way, should be about doing that, some sort of mindfulness of the time we're given. In that TED Talk, I reminded people, and I remind myself, that the odds of being born are astro-frickin-nomical, infinitesimal, if you will. The odds of being born are 1 in 400 trillion. That's just the biological part of the sperm and the egg breakdown. Forget all the things that had to happen before that. Who met who and who went here and how this happened. It's incalculable. And the fact that you showed up at this particular time, in this particular form, to do the things that only you can do, I think that should be of paramount importance. Of course, we get distracted. Life gets in the way. You end up working 90,000 hours out of your life and find something, hopefully, that you enjoy doing for 90,000 hours. So all of those pieces have been floating through my mind this past few days. And I wrote something when Ricky passed that, you know, I say on the show, I mean, I'm always working without a net. I don't ever use a script, but there are certain times when I will write something to get it out of my head. I tell people all the time, when in doubt, write it out. Get it out of your brain. Get out in front where you can see it. So there are good things and sometimes not so good things. And this is a bittersweet thing because my thoughts of Ricky are connected to a very different time in my life, a long, long time ago. In my youth, there was nothing more anticipated than our yearly trek north every summer from Chicago to the Fox Valley, Wisconsin. It was the time when a city kid had a chance to be a country boy for a week or so, leaving the concrete and steel behind in favor of cornfields, stock car races, fishing expeditions, and endless fun in the sun with our cousins to the north on my mom's side. My Uncle Ron had a farm right across the road from the mighty Fox River, and it was all about chasing rabbits and getting headbutts from a goat and shooting a long gun and wheeling it on motorbikes with my cousins Gary and Doug. Hide and seek in the rows of corn that rustled in the wind while barefoot and feeling the warm earth between my toes is a memory that endures. Tommy, Julie, and Pam lived in a small house on Charlotte Street in Appleton. It's where Uncle Ray's stock cars were parked in the driveway. We'd go watch him race at Kakana or other tracks that always had some sort of fun fair attached to them. The roar of those engines on that clay track and the demolition derby and more popcorn than I could possibly eat was all part of the deal. A visit to Uncle Paul and Aunt Janet's was always an interesting outing. Paul was an ex-Marine, a hunter, a fisherman, and the requisite wall mounts adorned the place. I will never forget going upstairs to use the bathroom, and at the very top of the stairs at the landing hung a huge musky head, mouth agape, teeth sticking out like knives. Their kids, Susie, Sandy, and Jimmy, would give us the nickel tour, which included the hunting dogs in the big outdoor pen, which is just another foreign concept to a city kid like me. Our dogs slept on the couch at home. When we headed over to the Yachmans, it was the best of all worlds. My Uncle Dick had a backyard that was so big, we called it the Prairie. It overlooked U.S. Highway 41 that wound its way through Little Chute and then north to Green Bay. It was the perfect exploration area as my sister and I joined forces with Ricky and Lizzie in search of little brown toads and rabbits and other exotic species. My Uncle Dick had a riding mower. It was so cool. And I would jump on the machine, driving 1 mile per hour in ever larger circles with the lights on as dusk descended. Ricky had a Rupster. It was kind of like a go-kart deal for two with big knobby tires on it, and we'd tear up the turf on the prairie. While time spent with the cousins was always memorable, I was closest to Ricky. And over time, our adventures became legendary, at least in my mind. This kid was a perfectionist. He was meticulous and exacting in everything he did. His bedroom was immaculate. Everything was in place, from the car models we built to the stack of comic books and everything in between. We'd ride bikes to the Dairy Queen, buy a couple of dilly bars, and just sit outside in the summer sun talking about things that really mattered. Cars, trucks, and cars. By the time we were 17, Ricky had bought a 1969 Chevelle. It was a beautiful car that had some serious horsepower under the hood. One night, we took a ride to some really desolate area on the far side of Highway 41, and Ricky gave it what for. It was the first time in my life over 100 miles an hour. Back then, that road was a seemingly endless asphalt drag strip. Now, that road we burned up is part of the Fox Valley Mall. But not long after the road rally, the big adventure was the almost legendary crossing of Lake Butamore. I guess we figured it was time to explore the uncharted waters, average depth, 9 feet, of the massive lake. So one day we went to Kmart, pooled our resources, and bought a 2-man inflatable raft, drove to a hidden spot, dumped ourselves on the shoreline, blew up the raft with no pump, it took a while, and got ready to launch ourselves into the record books. We made it about 35 yards from shore, and in the distance, a major storm was brewing, kicking up whitecaps, making us work like the great crew of the Kon-Tiki expedition, just in an inflatable raft near Appleton. While we were fearless, we weren't totally stupid, and after a short consideration, decided to postpone our place in history and headed back to the shore, which we reached just as the heavens began to open up. As I recall, we took the raft back to Kmart, got a refund, and bought dilly bars. Time passes. Life changes. My folks are long gone, as are Uncle Ron and Aunt Norma. Uncle Dick and Auntie Ruthie have passed away, as well as Uncle Paul and Aunt Janet. Only Uncle Ray and Auntie Pat remain, and they've had to endure the pain of outliving their children, Tom, Julie, and Pam. And then the news came a couple of days ago that my cousin Ricky died suddenly at home, just 64 years young. So heartbroken for his family, his wife Julie, and his kids Tyler and Hannah. I spoke with Julie, who said there was some small comfort that he died cleaning up his already clean car, I'm sure, near the garage he spent so much time in. Ricky worked for 40 years as an industrial insulator. And then he transitioned to what he said was the best job of his life, retirement, which he was able to enjoy for over 5 years. He was able to enjoy his lifelong passion for Harley-Davidson motorcycles and cars, especially his Camaros and Corvettes. When they gathered up north to say goodbye to this good man, I spent the morning thinking about our adventures when we were just boys, and the later years when we'd meet up with our families for dinner and laugh about the precious times from so long ago. I'm really going to miss him. Time, the one commodity that consumes and replenishes itself in the same movement. Make it count. Tomorrow is promised to none of us. Until next time, thanks for listening. Be well, safe travels. Keep the faith.
Yesterday I had a dream about dying, about laying to rest and then flying. How the moment at hand is the only thing we really own. And I lay in my bed and I wonder, after all has been said and is done for, why is it thus we are here and so soon we are gone? Is this life just a path to the place that we all have come from? Does the heart or a sigh, or a song. And if so, then I sing for my father, and in truth you must know I would rather he were here by my side. We could fly on the wings of a dream to a place where the spirit would find us, and the joy and surrender would bind us. We are one anyway. Anyway, we are more than we seem. There are those who will lead us, protect us each step of the way. From beginning to end, for each moment, forever, each day. Such a gift has been given, it can never be taken away. There are those in this life who are friends from our heavenly home. So I listen to the voices inside me, for I know they are there just to guide me. And my faith will proclaim it is so, we are never alone. From the light to the light, from the dark of the night to the dawn. He is so in my heart, he is here, he could never be gone. Though the singer is silent, there still is the truth of the song. Dying, about laying to rest and then flying. How the moment at hand is the only thing we really own. And I lay in my bed and I wonder, after all has been said and is done for, why is it thus we are here and so soon gone? Oh, why is it thus we are here and so soon?